In 1753 I was born, and was mostly entrusted to the care of my Aunt Hannah, my mother's sister, and my grandmother, Agnes Bewick. And the first thing I can remember was that the latter indulged me in everything I had a wish for, or in other words, made me a great pet. I was not to be snubbed, as it was called, do what I would, and in consequence of my being thus suffered to have my own way, I was often scalded and burnt, or put in danger of breaking me bones by falls from heights I had clambered up to. The next circumstance which I will remember was that of my being put to Mickley School when very young. I was some time at this school, without making much progress in learning my letters and spelling small words. The master, perhaps, was instructed not to keep me very close at my book, but in process of time he began to be more and more severe upon me, and I see clearly at this day that he frequently beat me when faultless, and also for not learning what it was not in my power to comprehend. Others suffered in the same way, for he was looked upon as a severe or cross man, and did not spare his rod. His name I do not recollect, but he was nicknamed Shabby Rounds. He was a tall, thin man, with a countenance severe and grim. He walked about the school with the toss or a switch in his hand. Upon some occasion or other, he ordered me to be flogged, and this was to be done by what was called hugging. That is, by mounting me upon the back of a stout boy, who kept hold of my hands over his shoulders, while the posteriors were laid bare, and where he supposed he could do the business freely. In this instance, however, he was mistaken, for with a most indignant rage I sprawled and kicked and flung, and, as I was told, bit the innocent boy on the neck, when he instantly roared out and flung me down, and on my being seized again by the old man, I rebelled and broke his shins with my iron-hooped clogs and ran off. By this time the boy's mother, who was a spirited woman and lived close by, attracted by the ferment that was raised, flew into the schoolroom, when a fierce scold ensued between the master and her. And after this I went no more to his school, but played the truant every day, and amused myself by making dams and swimming boats in the small burn which ran through a place then called the Collier's Close Wood until evening, when I returned home with me more fortunate or more obedient schoolfellows. How long it was before my absence from school was discovered, I know not, but I got many severe beatings from my father and mother. Some time after this, my father put me to school under the care of the Reverend Gregson of Ovingham, and well do I remember the conversation that passed between them on the occasion. It was little to my credit, for my father begun by telling him that I was very unguidable, and that he couldn't do it, and begged of my new master that he would undertake that task, and they both agreed that to spare the rod was to spoil the child. After being some time kept at reading, writing, and figures, how long I know not, but I know that as soon as my question was done upon my slate, I spent as much time as I could in filling with my pencil all the other spaces of it with representation of such objects as had struck my fancy. And these were rubbed out for fear of a beating before my question was given in. After learning figures as far as fractions and decimals, I was then put to learn Latin, and in this I was for some time complimented by my master for the great progress I was making. But as I never knew for what purpose it was that I was put to learn it, I was wearied out with getting off long tasks, I rather flagged in this department of my education, and the margins of my books and every space of spare and blank paper became filled with various kinds of devices or scenes I had met with. but as I soon filled all the blank spaces in my books, I had recourse at all spare times to the gravestones and the floor of the church porch with a bit of chalk to give vent to this propensity of mind of figuring for whatever I had seen. At that time I had never heard of the word drawn being made use of, nor did I know of any other paintings besides the king's arms in the church and the signs in Ovingham of the black bull, the white horse, the salmon, and the hounds and hare. I always thought I could make a far better hunting scene than that latter. The others were beyond my hand. I remember once of my master's overlooking me while I was very busy with my chalk in the porch, and of his putting me greatly to the blush for ridiculing and calling me a conjurer. My father also found a deal of fault for me spending my time in such idle pursuits. But my propensity to drawing was so rooted that nothing could deter me from persevering in it, and many of my evenings at home were spent in filling the flags of the floor and the hearthstone with my chalky designs. After I had long scorched my face in this way, a friend, in compassion, furnished me with a lot of paper upon which to execute my designs. Here I had more scope, pen and ink, and the juice of the brambleberry made a grand change. These were succeeded by a camel hair pencil and shells of colours, and thus supplied I became completely set up. But of patterns or drawings I had none. The beasts and birds which enlivened the beautiful scenery of woods and wilds surrounding my native hamlet furnished me with an endless supply of subjects. I now, in the estimation of my rustic neighbours, became an eminent painter, and the walls of their houses were ornamented with an abundance of my rude productions at a very cheap rate. These chiefly consisted of particular hunting scenes, in which the portraits of the hunters, the horses, and of every dog in the pack were in their opinion, as well as in my own, faithfully delineated. But while I was proceeding in this way, I was at the same time deeply engaged in matters nearly allied to this propensity for drawing, for I only became acquainted not only with the history and the character of the domestic animals, but also with those which roamed at large.